You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Embarrassing. The Pelicans were without four starters, including perennial MVP candidate Anthony Davis, five of their top six scorers. They were down 15 in the first half, and yet they still waltzed into Toyota Center and came out with a 121-116 win, improving their record to 23-28, dropping the Rockets to 29-21. On that incredibly unfortunate note, welcome in to another postgame episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Tuesday evening, so many of the good vibes from this homestand, opening wins over the Raptors and the Magic, winning 5 of 7, the first 7 that is, without Clint Capela. That feels a distant memory now with the Rockets losing to a badly outmanned New Orleans Pelicans squad, 121-116. The Rockets had a 15-point lead in the first half, but ultimately that came down to hot shooting on their part. By and large, the Pelicans just looked like they wanted the game a lot more. They out-rebounded Houston by 10, which is a constant theme without Clint Capela. But overall, for the balance of the game, they defended harder. They moved well without the ball. It felt like just a layup line at times for the Pelicans. The Rockets' off-ball defense was very poor. They didn't have rim protection, which you wouldn't expect with a 6'8 center in Kenneth Faried. Jahlil Okafor led the Pelicans 27 points, 12 rebounds, which reflects the level of resistance or lack thereof the Rockets had on both ends near the rim. James Harden had 37 points to lead the Rockets, also 11 rebounds, 6 assists, but so many of those 37 came in garbage time for the game. 11 of 32, 6 of 18 from 3, nowhere near good enough. Jrue Holiday, I thought, played some of the best defense we've seen against James all year. It still wasn't a bad game from James by any stretch of the imagination, but as the Pelicans went from down 15 in the middle of the second quarter to somehow winning by late in the third, the Rockets needed some sort of counterpunch, and Harden, I don't know if it was the defensive holiday, maybe it was the mileage from the past month catching up with him, but it felt like he was reluctant to drive as much as we have seen him do of late. He also had 5 turnovers, and the Rockets, even though Harden had 37, what I think this game shows you is how dependent they have been over this past stretch. The Rockets entered having won 18 of their last 24 games. Well, a lot of it's because James Harden has played out of this world. And in a game where James was pretty good, but certainly not great, nowhere near efficient enough during the game, he seemed to get bothered. I don't know if it was Holiday's defense. Maybe he thought he wasn't getting foul calls. Maybe he was tired. I don't know. When he looks at the film, I'm sure he'll see some possessions that he didn't attack the way he has done at times in this recent stretch, and only he knows the real reasons. But regardless of what those are, the fact is the Rockets didn't have a counter. And when you look at this game, there's a lot of angles that you can break down the loss from. Overall, it's inexcusable, and Houston falling to 29-21, they're still in the 5 seed in the Western Conference, but that's missing the mark because, really, the Western Conference has so much parity. They're in the 5 spot now at 29-21, but the Clippers are in the 8 spot at 28-23. That's a whopping game and a half that you're up over the 8 seed, and you're only up 3 games over the number 9 seed, which would be missing the playoffs altogether. And right now, that's the Lakers, who are poised to get LeBron James back relatively soon. You're only up a half game on the Spurs and Jazz in the 6 and 7 spots, respectively, as I'm recording this late Tuesday night. And of course, the Rockets will play the Jazz red hot, winners of 9 of their last 10, on night 2 of a road back-to-back on Saturday night. And that stretch, this 4-game road trip, which begins in Denver and Utah Friday and Saturday, is the beginning of a stretch that is not going to be kind to the Rockets at all from a scheduling perspective. 11 of their next 16 on the road. And for a Rockets team that entered Tuesday having won 18 of their last 21 at Toyota Center against a badly outmanned New Orleans Pelicans team, that's the kind of win you need to get to bank to offset losses that are going to come when the schedule gets more difficult, and also to offset the 11-14 start to the season through the first 25 games. So that's why this loss hurts much more than just one of 82. As with letting the Brooklyn game slip away, it's the fact that your margin of error just simply is not there. So for the Rockets, there's lots of culprits. You can point to James Harden, who, while still good, wasn't great. That step back in his performance certainly hurt the Rockets. The Pelicans averaged over 60 points per half. The Rockets had just 50 in the second half. After starting 10 of 18 from three, they finished making just 9 of their last 38, which is below 25%, and that total was inflated by a couple in the last minute of the game after the Rockets were down 12 with 2 minutes to go and got things kind of close but never really threatened in the final 60 seconds. On paper, it's not the worst loss in the world simply because you look at the macro. The Rockets are 5-3 through 8 games without Clint Capella. They're 2-1 in a 3-game homestand that I think most of us going into it would have gladly taken 2-1 because we assumed without Clint Capella and Chris Paul that Toronto with Kawhi Leonard would have been a loss. It wasn't. So when you look at it from a very broad 82-game perspective, the Rockets without Clint Capella against a Pelicans team that was pretty long, athletic, even without their top guys. It's not inexcusable. It's not unheard of. But the problem for the Rockets, before we dissect the X's and O's of what went wrong, and we'll do that plenty in segment 2 and segment 3, the problem that I want to stress off the top is the fact, and I've said this before, but the Rockets are not at a point where you can continue to give away games. You need to steal games to offset all the things that went wrong. The 1-5 start, the 4-7, the 11-14. What happened less than 2 weeks ago against Brooklyn? I know there have been a lot of circumstances. I know they've had horrible luck with injuries. All of that is true. But in a Western Conference with this much parity, to even get home court advantage in the first round, forget trying to get in the 2-3 passing either Denver or the Thunder. Right now, the Thunder are suddenly 3 games ahead of you. The Nuggets 6 clear with the Rockets entering Denver without Clint Capella, the biggest reason they've won so many consecutive games against the Nuggets over the years, entering Friday night's game, although the Rockets will have 2 games of rest at least, and hopefully they'll want to get this sour taste out of their mouths. Again, at this point, you are 3-6 games back, respectively, and you're now at the 50-game mark of an 82-game season. That is far from insignificant. Right now, you are only a couple of games up on the 8 seed and 3 games up on the 9 seed, that being the Lakers, who are about to get LeBron James back. So regardless of the fact that your talent is better than what it shows right now, the fact that Chris Paul is in just his second game after missing 17 with a hamstring strain, the fact that Clint Capella is still out, all of those things are legitimate excuses to a point. If you want to argue that the Rockets in April or May are going to be better than their record, they probably will be. But part of the issue is that even if they're better than their record, if you're starting off every series playing game 1 and game 2 on the road, and if things get tight, the impactful game 5, the series is tied at 2, and a potential game 7 on the road, even though the Rockets are battle-tested, even though they have a lot of veterans, that can have an impact. And if the Rockets, if they don't have home court at this point, forget about round 2 and potentially round 3. At this point, the reasonable goal would be to try and get home court advantage in round 1 and figure out the rest later. Losses like this hurt because of what you have already suffered earlier this year. So while you can say that it's just 1 out of 82, that these things happen to every team, and they do, the fact is, when you already lost a game to Cleveland in November, relatively uncompetitively, when you started 1-5, 4-7, 11-14, when you let a 7-point lead, an 8-point lead go in the final 90 seconds twice against the Brooklyn Nets at home, these things add up. So do I think the Rockets are dramatically that different from when they looked solid in that rally over a bigger Orlando squad on Sunday, or when they looked scintillating in racing out to a 22-point lead and beating a superior team, at least talent-wise, in the Toronto Raptors, the most wins in the NBA? No, I don't think one game for the Rockets, and some of it you credit Jrue Holiday for some outstanding defense, Jahlil Okafor showing at least offensively why he had the talent to be a top 3 pick near the rim, finishing well inside, Alvin Gentry, New Orleans coach, longtime, one of my favorites in the league. you give the Pelicans a lot of credit, and these types of nights can happen to anyone. The problem for the Rockets, they have happened too often this season. They continue to happen. Your margin of error is very minimal now, and this is a point where the Rockets needed to get greedy. They needed a 3-0 homestand. They needed to start 6-of-8 without Clint Capella to build some buffer for a very tough road trip in which three or four games are at Denver, at Utah, that's on a back-to-back, and then at Sacramento to finish it off against a very young and inspiring Kings team. Instead, they go into it on an extreme downer and now get ready for their next game at Denver, a team that they've beaten so many times in a row, and will undoubtedly, with the Rockets not having Clint Capella, especially, and playing at home and from a national TV audience, be seeing red when the Rockets run in there on Friday night and be looking for revenge. It's not that the Rockets are incapable of winning that game or still accomplishing their goals in the regular season, let alone the playoffs. Of course, this game doesn't kill it. But what it does, yet again, it unnecessarily pushes their backs to the wall. And that's been a theme that's happened too often this year. Now, to be fair, they have generally responded very well. After starting the year 11-14, as I said, they're now, in the next 25 games, they went 18-7, which was close to a 60-win pace. And they only had Chris Paul and Clint Capella playing alongside James Harden for 5 of the 25 games. So thus far, they did a pretty good job when they pushed their backs, or had their backs pushed to the wall. But even good teams, you can ask too much. And at some point, the way these losses continue to mount, even if it's a schedule loss, even if James Harden is tired, even if these things happen over 82 games, all of that is true. But at some point, these things can catch up with you. And that's what I'm afraid, not so much now, but especially down the road, Rockets playing 11 of their next 16 on the road. Are we entering a stretch where this may be about to catch up with the Rockets beyond just Tuesday's deflating, embarrassing, and inexcusable 121-116 loss to the New Orleans Pelicans? Now, as we continue our recap, we spent much of the first segment discussing the landscape of the Western Conference, the Rockets' start to the year. They're now 29-21 through 50 games, and why, even though the embarrassing loss is just one game, it feels like more than that when you consider the tough schedule coming up, the brutal start to the season the Rockets had, and this one, even if it's one game out of 82, the Rockets clearly the more talented team, and for various reasons, just were not able to win the basketball game. Our last two segments will discuss what went wrong, and for me, you can really split it in two between the offense and the defense. And even though they gave up 121 points, I'm actually going to start with the offense, because the defense, to me, part of the issues are of their undoing, but part of it is just without Clint Capella, your top rim protector, rebounder, shot blocker, you're starting a guy at 6'8" at the center spot in Kenneth Faried, you're just not that good of a defensive team. I think that's not to let them off the hook for that. I think the Rockets will say they didn't take the game as seriously as they needed to, but ultimately, I was actually a little bit more deflated by what they showed offensively, because really, the Pelicans, especially without Anthony Davis, other than Drew Holiday, there's not any sort of impact defensive player out there, and yet the Rockets were completely stuck in mud. They started the game shooting 10 of 18 from 3, yet made just 9 of their last 38 and scored just 50 points in the second half. And what stood out to me most about this game, besides the fact that Drew Holiday played excellent defense on James Harden, now Harden still had 37 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, but he had to take 32 shots, very inefficient to do it, and part of that is just James Harden can make some really ridiculous shots. Even if you defend him well, he's capable of putting up 37, 11, and 6. That's why he's the MVP. What was so frustrating about this game was the fact that with James Harden only at, I would say, a B, B-minus level performance, all you needed was someone else to step up, and no one was capable of doing so. I don't think it was coincidental when the Rockets raced out to a 15-point lead in the first half. Eric Gordon made 4 of his first 5 from 3. For the game, he ended up finishing 4 of 12, which tells you that he missed his final 7. Chris Paul in 26 minutes, 10 points, 9 assists, 4 rebounds, 4 of 9 from the field, plus 11, which was the best plus-minus for anyone on the Rockets, but a lot of his success came as a distributor, 9 assists to 2 turnovers. He just doesn't seem to have the bounce, and I'm not sure how much of it is the injury, because he missed 17 games. Even aside from just the hamstring, I think clearly he's still working on getting his conditioning ready. He's riding the bike when he's not playing to make sure he keeps his leg loose. And how much of it might be the fact that he's 33 years old and you're 14. There's probably a lot of things going on. But the bottom line is that if James Harden is going to be picked up well by Jrue Holiday and they're committing extra help to James, they double-teamed him a decent bit, then you need one of your secondary playmakers to step up and make plays. Early in the game, Eric Gordon did, and that's why the Rockets got out to a 15-point lead. He stopped doing that, and Chris Paul, while he was successful as a facilitator, he was never able to truly get going as a scorer. And then because of that, there just was no one else that's able to create their own offense. Austin Rivers was a team where it's minus 16. He made 2 of 6 from 3, which is better than the 2 of 24 that he had been shooting this last 5 or so games. But he was one of many Rockets that was victimized in backdoor cuts defensively. Kenneth Faried had 19 and 11, 8 of 17 from the field. But, well, he fumbled away a dunk in the first half, missed a dunk in the second half. And it's not like you look at Kenneth as a guy that you can dump it down to and expect to create his own offense on the low block or cross anyone up off the dribble. No, if James Harden is going to be defended well and or doubled, what you need is one of your release valves going up against lesser defenders, Chris Paul and Eric Gordon, to step up, and by and large, they were unable to do so. Eric Gordon did so in the first quarter. After that, he was a relative no-show, and he also got in foul trouble with 5. Chris Paul, he was a good facilitator, but he was not really able to create his own offense, made just 1 of 5 from 3, and perhaps it's an unfair burden because he's coming off a 17-game absence with a grade 2 hamstring strain. But regardless, that's what you are paying Chris Paul and Eric Gordon to do. And to me, offensively, that was what was most alarming. Because even though the Rockets gave up 121 points, look, they scored 66 in the first half because they scored 35 in the first quarter. They got off to a fast start. They needed someone, anyone, in the middle portion of this game. They were up 15 in the middle of the second quarter, and it felt like the Pelicans were just waiting for the knockout punch. And at that point, if they go down 20-25, the effort might sink. Well, instead, because no one for the Rockets, and they took a lot of threes, none of them went down. I think they missed their last 7 or 8 in the second quarter. Because of that, it let the Pelicans hang around. They got back to within single digits at the half. And a game that should have been put away, it let them hang around. They're a young team. And then once they got it within 5 in the second half, you could see when the switch flipped that they started to believe. And for Houston, it's not that the defense is irrelevant. They were below average. There were far too many layup lines. They were undisciplined away from the ball. All of that stuff is true. But you were still up by 15 in spite of that because you started off the game making a lot of shots, creating off the dribble. In the middle of the game, you needed someone. I would have liked to see Harden more aggressive in terms of trying to force the issue, getting into the lane and or drawing fouls rather than settling for the threes. As far as Chris Paul and Eric Gordon, I would have liked to have seen them do much of anything from a scoring perspective. But the Rockets, there was a stretch in the second quarter where they could have put this game away. They didn't. They let the Pelicans hang around. And defensively, it's a story for the Rockets. It's been a story for the Rockets all season long because they've consistently been a bottom 10 defense and a top 5 offense. But especially in this stretch without Clint Capella, I don't think it's a secret that the Rockets are not going to be a good defensive team. They need to be, especially now that you have all 3 of your big guards back, James Harden, Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, and now you have Austin Rivers coming off the bench. You need to be better. And offensively, they started the game well, and for whatever reason, maybe there's fatigue, maybe it's randomness, I don't know what it is, and certainly Jrue Holiday deserves a heck of a lot of credit for how he defended James Harden. But I think beyond just Harden needing to be better, I think this is a game where you needed one of your secondary playmakers to take over. Neither of them did. That let the Pelicans hang around, and ultimately, against a Rockets team that had very little defensive resistance, Rockets shots weren't falling, Pelicans had too many easy looks, and over the balance of 48 minutes, that was enough to tilt this game to the Pelicans and the 121-116 victory. Final thoughts as we recap Tuesday evening's depressing episode, the 121-116 unfathomable loss that the Rockets suffered against a Pelicans squad without 4 starters and 5 of their top 6 scorers. Of course, that includes perennial MVP candidate Anthony Davis. The Rockets, yet again, gave up a ton of points. 121 for the game, 59 in the first half, 62 in the second, and it's the culmination of a season of issues on that end of the floor. They've been a bottom five unit all season long. It started with defensive rebounding. They were minus 10 yet again. But in this stretch, without Clint Capella in particular, that's where it's gone south. They were quality their first game without him against a reeling Memphis team, giving up just 94 points. But the next game gave up 145. That was in overtime, so that's a little bit inflated against the Nets. 134 in the OT win over the Lakers, slightly inflated, but still, even if you take off the overtime points, point is, it's not good. 121 to the Sixers, 110 to a bad Knicks team, 119 to the Raptors, 98 against the Magic. That was a good performance, but you gave up 61 in the first half, and then 121 tonight against the Pelicans. It's hard when your offense has to be that great to overcome those types of totals. And there's a couple of things that stood out to me tonight. The biggest thing, and this goes back to the past week, really, beginning with that Knicks game, is how poor the Rockets have been defensively over the past week, particularly against teams that they should beat. The Knicks, they gave up 63 points in the first half. The Magic, they gave up 61. The Pelicans, they gave up 59. Now, the difference in the Pelicans game, the Pelicans were equally effective, if not more, in the second half when they got 62. But the Knicks, they got just 47 in the second half after scoring 63 in the first. The Magic, only 37 in the second half after scoring 61 in the first. And what that tells you, when you see discrepancies that large, it's not just that they were unlucky, randomness, they missed some shots in the second half they made in the first. No, there is an intensity gap. And yet again, for the third time in less than a week, the Rockets came out lethargic, thinking that because they have James Harden, because they are better on paper, that they should be able to just show up and get that victory. And yet again, 63 for the Knicks, 61 for the Magic, 59 for the Pelicans. You let those teams, those types, hang around, and they can become a lot more dangerous than their record says they should be. It almost cost the Rockets against the Knicks and the Magic. It finally did catch up with them against the Pelicans. But the Rockets have to start respecting the game more. Overall, what happened in the first half, sure, some of it, the rebounding, they're starting Kenneth Faried at 6'8". Some of it also, I think, Faried on the perimeter, he's still learning their switching scheme. He's also got a lot of rust because he's barely played the last season and a half. He's new to the team. He's really new to basketball after not playing that much. So there's some kinks they have to work out, and over time they will. And beyond that, sure, they're undersized, and starting a 6'8" center without Clint Capella, some of it is out of their control. But when you have bad teams putting up 63, 61, and 59 in the first half, and then in two of those three, they went from 63 to 47 and 61 to 37. And by the way, the one statement opponent the Rockets have had over the past week, it's the Raptors, who, even though the Rockets were outmanned, still did not have Chris Paul back, and they had Clint Capella out as well. The Rockets raced out to a 46-24 lead in the middle of the second quarter, limiting the Raptors to 24, just as impressive as the 46 they put up on the offensive end. What it shows you is that there is a correlation to the opponent. And that's what's so frustrating. Now, maybe you can make a case that when the Rockets go on the road, and they've been a worse team on the road, before you make that argument, keep in mind the Rockets entered Tuesday having played 18 or won 18 of their last 21 at Toyota Center, where they've struggled has been on the road, so they haven't been a better road team of late relative to their home play. But if you really want to squint hard enough, you can make a case saying, well, if they play at Denver, national TV, at Utah, second night of a back-to-back, that was one of the more impressive wins in the same setting a year ago, at Sacramento against a Kings team that's playing well and trying to get on the inside of the playoff picture, those are the type of games that might inspire them more than a lazy Tuesday night against the Pelicans or a lazy Sunday night against the Magic. You might could argue that, but the problem, it goes back to what we said in the first segment. The Rockets don't have a margin of error anymore. It'd be one thing if this were like a year ago and they were the one or two seed and they had this huge gap between themselves and any other team besides Golden State. By the end of the year, even over Golden State, which is why even though you saw a little bit of lax effort in April, that wasn't a big deal in the regular season as they closed it out because they'd already clinched the one seed, all that type of stuff. Yes, even though habits are a big deal, you will occasionally have bad games, and veterans especially, they're not going to play to their fullest extent every night over 82. That's understandable. But this one, with the Rockets having let so many games already go this season, with the Western Conference as jam-packed as it is, And as far as energy, the Rockets knew going in they would have both Wednesday and Thursday off before next playing late Friday night in Denver. There's no excuse to show up as flat as they did in this one. And that, to me, when they look at the film, yeah, they're undersized. They're not going to be a good rebounding team. They're starting a 6'8" guy at the center spot. They're starting a 6'6" power forward in PJ Tucker, a 6'4" small forward in Eric Gordon. All of those things are true. They are undersized. They have a 33-year-old point guard coming off a grade 2 hamstring strain in just his second game. All of those things are true. They're not going to all of a sudden become an upper echelon defensive team. The reason they're giving up 63, 61, and 59 first half points to the Knicks, the Magic, and the Pelicans before magically turning it on in the second half in two of those three games is not just because of physical limitations, because those physical limitations were still there in the second half. They were still there, by the way, when you raced out to that big lead in the first half against the Raptors and won that game largely because you were able to play from in front. No, what those tell you is that the team is playing with its food. They just did not come out and respect the game with the level that really a team led by veterans like James Harden and Chris Paul and a great coach like Mike D'Antoni should. It's disappointing. It's a loss the Rockets should not have suffered. Some of these issues, they're not going to get magically fixed, and especially going up against Nikola Jokic and Rudy Gobert the next two games. It's a rough matchup, and I don't like the way these next few games set up for the Rockets. But what makes it worse is that you should go in at least feeling good about yourself and say, hey, you should have been a season-best 10-game over 500 tonight. You should have been on a 4-game winning streak. You should have just finished up a 3-0 homestand, winning 19 of your last 22 at Toyota Center, and felt like even if you go, say, 1-3 or 2-2 on the road trip, that as soon as you get back home, you can start to offset that. Unfortunately, you can't. And the Rockets, 121-116 losers, they lost a game to a Pelicans team without its five of its top six scorers, four starters. It's a game in which they're the better team, and it hurts no matter what your record is to lose a game in the NBA when you're the better team. But when you have all the headwinds the Rockets are trying to overcome and you let that slip away, and again, really both ends of the floor, offensively, defensively, there are things within your control, just basic defense, not falling for backdoor cuts, initial denial, not fouling at the rim. Also, Nene's 11 minutes were just pitiful. If he's not going to give you anything, he was -9. I'm not sure why you're even playing a 36-year-old backup center. If they're getting layups, you might as well just play smaller, fire away from three, and hope you get hot the way you were early in the game. Regardless, a lot of this from the Rockets was self-inflicted. A lot of it was within their control. Unfortunately, they let another one slip away, and now they have a couple of days to stew on it before getting back in action to begin a very tough road trip Friday night in Denver. So for tonight, I think this is enough depressing Rockets talk. Sorry if I bummed y'all out, but, well, this was not a fun episode to get through. Hopefully, we'll have more positive content in the days ahead. If you want those episodes, and until today, what's been a pretty positive month or so of Rockets ball, they had won 18 of their last 24. I strongly encourage you to follow me on Twitter and also check out our archives at LockedOnRockets.com. As mentioned, Twitter, you can find me on there at Ben Dubose, the show on there at Locked On Rockets, and you can also at Locked On NBA Net on both Twitter and Instagram follow our curated feed. That's our Locked On Podcast Network experts across the NBA covering teams just like I do in Houston. So if you want to hear what they're saying about their teams or about the Rockets as they get ready to, in Denver's case, host the Rockets on Friday night, they've got a great host up there. Then follow that Locked On NBA Net curated feed on Twitter and Instagram. Also, final few plugs I want to toss out there. Please subscribe if you have not already and leave 5-star reviews. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, Spotify, so on and so forth. Subscribe, leave 5-star reviews. You get the episodes right when they come out, and I get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers with the show with your 5-star reviews by making advertisers see all the great things that we're doing here and the wonderful feedback we're getting from Rockets fans, and hopefully that keeps us going financially as the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Also, if you're interested in even advertising yourself, that would help me out a lot. Then lockedonrockets@gmail.com is our email address, so don't hesitate to reach out. Email if you've got questions about the team, suggestions for the show, or, of course, the aforementioned advertising inquiries, please don't hesitate to let me know. Also, if you're not able to get on iTunes or your platform provider of choice, but you're still able to listen, such as a voice assistant provider or a smart speaker, then you can just say, play podcast Locked On Rockets, and even if you haven't downloaded the podcast, you can still find our most recent episode that way as well. One final time, the unhappy final from Toyota Center Tuesday night. Pelicans 121, Rockets 116. Pelicans improved to 23-28, even with Anthony Davis and three other starters sidelined, five of their top six scorers. Rockets fall to 29-21. They do finish the homestand at 2-1, but now they embark on a very difficult four-game road trip, beginning in Denver and Utah on Friday and Saturday nights. So for now, this is where I'll leave off. Take it as best you can, Rockets fans, and know that, well, it probably can't get worse than this type of loss. At least if you lose this weekend, it'll be to better opponents. Whatever happens, though, for better or for worse, we'll have you covered right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.